This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nice offensive boards and putbacks. Moussa Cisse came in when Dane Danger couldn't play because he had four fouls, and he did really, really, really good work. And then P.J. Carter didn't score a single point, but played some really, really, really solid defense in a very, very important part of that game. And of course, you know, Colby Rogers with his 21 points. I mean, it was a game in March between two teams that are very good. So.
No, it was a great atmosphere too, Muntz. I was happy you got to cover a good one because yesterday actually felt like a fun game, and we don't really have many of those right now with the conference schedule.
No, we do not. And I said this in the moment on social media, that game, and I wrote it in my story. That game lived up to every ounce of the hype that it got, and then some. It was spectacular. It was a treat for everybody involved. There was a UAB fan who was jawing at the Memphis players and the Memphis coaches nonstop. He was sitting on the sideline, and even he, by the end, like when P.J. Haggerty hits a shot and he turns around and he looks at that guy and he points at him, even he, like, he couldn't say anything. Like, he was just happy to, even though his team was starting to lose it in that moment, he couldn't do anything but smile because it was that type of game. And it was fun.
No, I'm with you. That's why we watch sports. All right, Muntz, we appreciate it, buddy. Congratulations.
Thank you again.
That is Jason Muntz, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. When we come back, let's get into the world of sports. We had NFL Combine. Got to talk some Cam Ward with Herd. Get into a little bit else other from the NFL. Also, big ACC story developing. Want to get into all that during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Over at Zen Sports, Tennessee's newest sports book, they are offering a multi-sport profit boost. All you need is a minimum of one NBA or college basketball game tonight, a one NHL leg, and one MLB spring training game. So you get one game from each, and you will have your profit boosted 15% up to $500. So again, of your three-leg or more parlay, you need a minimum of one NBA or men's college basketball game, one NHL game tonight, and one spring training leg, and then you will have the opportunity to have your profit boosted 15% up to $500. Another thing that Zen Sports is giving to Tennesseans. Don't forget, if you got a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to wager. Odds are subject to change. Terms and conditions do apply. So again, the multi-sport profit boost, one NBA or college basketball game, one NHL game, one spring training game, all today. You can have your profit boosted 15% up to $500. In sports, betting just got better. All right, Herd, this is a lot in the weeds, so stop me when whatever I read does not make sense, and we'll try to go through it because this is very legalese right here. This from Andrea Adelson, David Hale, and Pete Thamel of ESPN. Florida State and Clemson will vote Tuesday on an agreement that would ultimately result in the settlement of four ongoing lawsuits between the schools and the ACC and a new revenue distribution strategy that would solidify the conference's membership for the near future, sources told ESPN. That call has already happened. They voted yes. Essentially, what I'm saying there is they've agreed to stop suing each other.
Oh, okay.
Okay. According to sources, the settlement includes two key objectives: establishing a new revenue distribution model based on viewership and a change in the financial penalties for the existing league's grant of rights before its conclusion in June of 2036. Translation: Florida State and Clemson want more money, largely based on who watches more TV, and they also want the exit fee, which some believe was over $500 million, if you wanted to leave the league early. This new revenue distribution model, or brand initiative, I quote, is based on a five-year rolling average of TV ratings, though some logistics of this formula remain tricky, including how to properly average games on the unrated ACC network or subscription channels. The brand initiative will be funded through a split in the league's TV revenue, with 40% distributed evenly among the 14 longstanding members and 60% going toward the brand initiative and distribution based on TV ratings. That's kind of what I laid out. Florida State and Clemson say we drive 80% of all viewership for games. We want that. There's also some storytelling in that, like they play the most on ABC. Turns out if you play the most on network television, your ratings go higher. Top earners are expected to net an additional $15 million or more, according to sources. While some schools will see a net reduction in annual payout of up to about $7 million annually, an acceptable loss, according to several administrators at schools likely to be impacted in exchange for some near-term stability. The brand initiative is expected to begin for the coming fiscal year. The brand fund, combined with separate, quote, success initiatives, quote, fund approved back in 2023 and enacted last year that rewards schools for postseason appearances, would allow teams that hit necessary benchmarks in each to close the revenue gap with the SEC and the Big Ten, possibly adding in the neighborhood of about $30 million or more annually should a school make a deep run in the college football playoff or NCAA basketball tournament and lead the way in TV ratings. Okay, so setting all that aside, that all just gets to the same point. Like, they want it to be based on the people that bring the most eyeballs and the people that win the most. Okay, so be it. Here's what really matters. Andy Staples, now of On3, has done additional reporting, and he says through a source, the key is after this settlement has gone through, the penalty to exit the league would be about $200 million, which my suspicion says that was about half of what the original number was. I don't think that number is going to motivate people, but what his source also added is that starting in 2029, so about 3 years from now, the penalty will go under $100 million. Didn't specify whether or not that's closer to $50 million or whatnot. When you hear under $100 million, you start to do the math of, okay, basically that means giving up probably a year of either SEC or Big Ten distribution money. Also, that would line up with when the Big Ten is going to redo their television deal, because they did a shorter term deal. I think their TV deal was 5 years. So basically their deal would be up then. And that way you could start to put the pieces on the board of more conference realignment. So my gut instant Monday overreaction to this is, if you thought the ACC was going to stick together through the end of the TV deal at 2036, I think not. I think we're going to see ACC movement. Now, what will be interesting to see is, does this open up a spot for Memphis? Is that their path? Or is the ACC going to look more towards, well, we've already started doing this Western expansion with Stanford and Cal. Are we going to look out there to maybe have a West division along with our core that's more on the East Coast and play it out like that? But to me, this opened up the door not only for Florida State and Clemson. I think North Carolina was very happy today. I think your Hurricanes probably were pretty happy today. Because also, they got probably the result they wanted, and they didn't have to get into the messiness of the court mix and suing your own league.
No, that's for sure, Jeffrey. How long is the SEC contract? Because I know you said the Big Ten was 5. The reason I asked you that is those 4 schools you just named, I think, though, because it's predicated on football and it's, you know, predicated by branding, Miami, Florida State, Clemson, and I put North Carolina there a little bit. But I think even if the Big Ten open, I know they don't care. I just think them 4 is more logistically, which logistics don't matter anymore. We know all of that. But I'm saying for the SEC than the Big Ten. And I get it's about the bottom dollar, but I'm just saying.
No, they. To me, like when the SEC says they always look for a cultural fit, really what I think they're saying is we just want people to say y'all.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like it's just kind of people that talk like us. And yeah. Like that's kind of really. Kind of what they mean.
And they are the same. I mean, the reason I say that, the Big Ten kind of got out of hand, but they worked their money. The ACC got out of hand. I think the SEC still kept people, it's still mostly in the SEC.
They would tell you their big deal is every SEC school touches each other.
Yes. Yeah,
right? I know that's a phrasing, but it's contiguous. Like, so Oklahoma touches Arkansas, Texas. Like, it's all still, it still makes sense in terms of, if you draw it on a map, like you don't have North Carolina in the state of California.
Yeah, exactly. So I say for them to keep it like that, they were like the two to four schools in the ACC. I think they should more be worried about the SEC. I don't know, but the Big Ten don't care, and I can see the Big Ten taking a Clemson, a Florida State. They just like to get better. But I'm just saying them 4 schools to me scream SEC or stay where they at.
So. Not to get too in the weeds, but one thing that's not made sense to me in the past few weeks is Greg Sankey and the SEC position as of 9 months ago was we do not care about automatic qualifiers for the college football playoff. We just want – basically, they went from wanting all at-large teams because, honestly, I think they thought if it's all at-large teams, we'll get as many in as possible to now – the public positioning is the 4 automatic qualifiers. Well, the plan that they want is largely the plan that the Big Ten has always wanted. And so what makes no sense to me is, did this season motivate the SEC to take this position that they are because they were opposed to it 9 months ago? I'm not saying you can't change your mind, but that is a drastic shift. That's not going from, you know, that's like going from a 9 to a 1. That's not like going from a 4 to a 6. Mm-hmm. And so what I've just kept wondering in the back of my mind is this some type of compromise? All right, hey, Big Ten, we'll go along with it. You want this plan? We'll go along with it. But we're getting something in return, and I just can't help but wonder. It's like you're going to stop the expansion in the South. The Southern schools, like we get North Carolina, we get Virginia, we get Clemson, we get Florida State, we get whoever we want. Miami, pick the schools that they want. We get that. And the Big Ten's like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. Because I think in the end they think eventually we're getting Notre Dame.
Oh, the Big Ten.
I think they think that.
I think
Notre Dame will hold out until they no longer have to. But I do think that day will come.
They no longer can.
Their position has always been, as long as they have access to the playoff, they will remain independent. And honestly, I kind of respect it.
For sure.
For every fan that gets annoyed, just think of it in these terms. They get to run their own business, they get to do it exactly the way they want, and they get to participate in the same fashion. As long as they're good enough, they get to be a part of it. But they get to run their own thing. I mean, basically, it'd be like saying, okay, I'll give you more money for Team Thad, but you're going to have to start having other issues. Like, you're going to have other people telling you how to run your program. Mm. You're also going to, maybe you got to play these games instead of wanting to play this game that matters. Mm. Like, you don't have any control of your schedule. You lose the freedom of being your own boss. And so I've always kind of respected that about them. And also, they hold a grudge because once upon a time, They wanted to be in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten was anti-Catholic. They're like, no. And so, you know what? They got a long memory. I can kind of, as a grudge guy, I can kind of respect that. So, but there will be a day when I think that that's no longer possible. It'll be, you want to keep playing in the playoff? Like, you got to come in here. And so at that point, I think the Big Ten knows, like, well, we'll take Notre Dame. And that is the biggest fish left in the sea.
For sure. For sure. But I also think that because of what you just said, and Notre Dame can stand on their own, I think you got to bring them right in, paying them top of the league money. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to do
they'll get whatever.
Crazy to
no,
get them.
Notre Dame will not be getting a partial share. When Notre Dame goes to whatever conference they'll be in, they will. I'll tell you this: they certainly won't be doing what SMU's doing, which is we won't take money for 7 years. We'll spend $500 million or more, and they won't be doing what Oregon and Washington are doing in the Big Ten, which is okay. We'll just take half. Like, just give us half. That's all we need. They will be getting whatever they want.
Even Oregon had to take that deal.
Oregon, Washington, yes, but they both had to take it.
Why Oregon, though? Oregon actually had leverage.
Well, not when, think about it in these terms. The Pac-12 was falling apart,
Yep. Didn't
have a TV deal. You found out that the corner schools were going to the Big 12. You know the league's not going to survive. And so their only choice was, we want to go to the Big 10 for survival, because they didn't have really a fallback option. And so at that point, the Big Ten got the deal they wanted, which was a half share.
Yeah, and I get why. I just think if Oregon was going to eventually, no matter who it was, make it right with what they, with Nike, what they bring to the table. I mean, think about it.
By the way, both schools were fine.
Yeah.
Both schools were like, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, Oregon. And then my thing about this thing, Oregon and SMU, it should have been something to come track. If we win the first year, you got to go, they both wins the leagues.
So, I think they will still, like, the only money, because this was what was fascinating about SMU, because SMU was kind of when it got to the ACC championship game, the only way SMU was going to make money from the ACC this year was reward-based, merit-based, or whatever, on the field-based. So whatever the money would have been for the playoff, the championship game, and then now the NCAA tournament, like, that's the only money that they can get. But you're right. I mean, Oregon walked in, didn't lose a conference game.
Didn't lose a game. So, yeah, that's yeah, I just think, I don't know, maybe I'm looking this wrong. I think Oregon is pretty strong. You know, now I get it. Coaches would always leave, and most of those coaches' careers are not the same, and Oregon's is. But, you know, I just feel like with the Nike bagging and all that, Oregon would have found this. I don't think it would have been like how Oregon State and Washington State, they were kind of the outliner little brothers in the Pac-12. But Oregon is a pretty strong brand, you know.
It's a strong brand, but you have to look at it at the time that they were going to make the deal. They didn't have another. It's not like, so for instance, when the Big Ten goes to get UCLA and USC, on paper, UCLA and USC can be like, well, we're still negotiating with the Pac-12. We're not happy. And so they threw full shares at them. But they didn't take, remember, the Big Ten doesn't take Oregon and Washington at that moment. Because at first people just thought, oh, well, now they're just going to get Oregon and Washington. Well, what the Big Ten, a.k.a. Fox, did was like, we'll see. Because they kind of knew how those other TV deals were going. And we'll wait for that, and they'll have no other landing spot. Here's a lifeboat. You get a half a share. Come on in. And they were glad to take it. But to your point, though, Oregon was also fine with it because Oregon cared less about getting every possible dollar from the TV deal because they just knew Uncle Phil's going to Uncle Phil's going to make up the difference. We're good.
So, and you saying the Big 12 came before the Big 10 and got them before? I thought it was afterwards. It was before.
So what initially triggers this all is that the Pac-12 went to go and redo their TV deal. And when they went to go redo their TV deal, they had some crazy media consultant go in and get in the ear of the president of Utah, I believe, and said, based on the brands that we have, the Pac-12 television deal should be worth, I think, I'm trying to do it from memory, I think the number was like $60 million a year, which is basically what the SEC and the Big Ten schools are getting. This is just TV deal. And that was presented to all the presidents, and they're like, oh, yeah, give us that. Well, when they took it to market, the market was, we'll give you about $25 million for it. Mm-hmm. And then what happens next is that USC in particular is like, we're not doing that anymore, which is kind of what happened with Texas and Oklahoma. They initially went to go and re-up with ESPN for the Big 12, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna hold off for a little bit. And they're like, oh, we know the SEC will take us tomorrow. We're going to do that, make sure we get the money. And so when the Pac-12 TV deal comes in at like $25 million with USC, UCLA, maybe it was 30, forgive the exact specifics, I'm doing it straight from memory. USC, UCLA, like, we got a problem. They get on the horn with Fox. Fox is like, we got a spot for you, hang on. And moves them to the Big Ten. And then you had the Arizona schools, Utah,
Colorado.
And Colorado all going, we're not going to wait here. Mm. We're going to go to the Big 12. And the Big 12 basically said, hey, that deal you're going to offer the Pac-12, that $25 million, yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah.
we'll take. And so they jumped the line because they were behind the Pac-12 in terms of who was up next. So they jumped the line. They're like, that deal that they didn't want, we'll take it. And ESPN was like, cool, here you go. Done. And so then you were left with these schools that were scrambling, and you had Washington and Oregon that were able to talk their way into going into the Big Ten at the discounted rate, whereas Washington State and Oregon State had nothing. And Stanford and Cal were looking at the same thing, and lo and behold, you still had enough high and mighty academic people in the ACC that were like, well, we can't have Stanford and Cal. Stuck with Oregon State and Washington State. Come on. Like, these are fine academic institutions. But you actually brought up something that I think is interesting. The logistics of it. I think it's quote-unquote fine for football. They're all flying charter. You're playing mostly on the weekends. Like, we can tell the amount of travel has impacted, I think, game results. Like, teams that were going across the country, like, that was a ton of travel. They didn't seem to play their best. I do wonder if the first full year, though, of everybody else having to travel, like we've seen all the basketball coaches talk about it. We know the women's basketball coaches are talking about it. We haven't even gotten into swimming, into all the other sports. I do wonder, though, after a year of this, if there are people that are like, this is not, like, it works for football fine, but is this going to kind of motivate people to, can we figure out a separate path? Because it looks like we can make it work for football uncomfortably. We can make it work. These other sports, though, it's just a nightmare.
No, it's tough. Amaro Morgan, that's from here, local guy, went to Cordova. So he coached at California. And we were talking 3 weeks ago. They had to be on the road a week. So they had to get to they played Duke. They had to get there Monday just to play Wednesday. And then they left there Wednesday, Thursday to go straight to Georgia Tech and Atlanta.
Yeah.
That's not how a college schedule usually works.
What about class, Herd?
That's what I'm saying. Now, he was telling me that they had
tutors and tutors stuff. Like they brought the academic staff.
A lot of their kids. Because he said the way Cal worked, like, 9 out of 10, like, you kind of already got to be on your academics for it to make sense to go there anyway.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So they were ahead of it, but I was just like, that's just more like a pro schedule right there.
No, it's like the West Coast trip.
Yeah.
Like, you're just gone for like 10 days.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So I thought that, but I did like it that once they was out there, they stayed, because I didn't want them to play North Carolina, come back to Cali a day or two, and then...
Unless they got the frequent flyer miles, but I don't think you get those when you charter.
Yeah, but I think it was really
like,
hard.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, like, think about it, if you're getting like... I mean, you could very easily have like platinum status by the end of the year.
Oh yeah,
with all those coast to coast trips. But like, I do wonder, is someone going to finally speak up and be like, "This doesn't work"?
No, I think that they should start the Pac-12 over. Part of starting it over, I know they already doing it on their own. Cal and Stanford should come back to that. Okay, I know it ain't gonna work now. Contract. I'm just using an example. Even the Texas schools. the SMUs, and then you add Memphis and Tulane and a couple of them. That should be the Pac-12. You know what I mean?
Like it seems to me, though, the issue is because, like, I've always thought this. Because I think Chip Kelly, our boy Chip Kelly, was saying this at least a year ago. Guys, put football over here. Let's let football do its own thing. But what are we doing with everybody else? But the problem is, all of these contracts are largely tied, let's be real, to the television money and what's in it for the television's product. It's like, we literally have inventory the entire year. Like, we are showing men's basketball. I mean, think about what the SEC is doing. You and I were talking about this. Like, we don't have, like, the fun Thursday night games anymore. Well, it's because the SEC is like, Thursday night and Sundays are women's college basketball days. And we're blowing it out. We're having, like, look at all the coverage that they're getting. And we are making sure our women's programs get exposed. Also, shout out to Dawn Staley. I think that's the first time she's ever won a conference on a coin flip. Did you see that yesterday?
Oh, yo, that's I heard about the coin flip in between, because it was them and Texas.
Texas, I think, yeah. And they could not, like, they could not break the tie. But that also shows, like, we can't do that. Like, this, the leagues are so big that we get into these tiebreakers where, like, coin flips are going to happen.
Yeah, and it takes you that's back like the really little amateur. Yes. You got to flip Pee-wee. I didn't even realize until 3 weeks ago that Texas was that good. So, like, number one status.
Because I think they split with South Carolina. LSU was up there, and then I think they took a couple of losses last couple of weeks.
Yeah, because you hear about the LSU, you hear about the South Carolina, but, like, it's like, you know, you hear about the Juju, yep. USC, you know, Notre Dame had a year's Duke, but it's like Texas number one right now. Like, you UConn, you hear about that, you hear about, you know, but I didn't know they had roles so far.
So they hired Vic Schaefer, the guy that got Mississippi State, when Mississippi State's women's got to, like, Final Four, I think they even got to the national championship game. They hired him, and since he's gotten there, it was a little rocky at first, but, like, he's got it. Turns out now, if Texas wants to be good in a sport, I hope you're sitting down for this, they can be.
Yeah, they have the resource. But even him, even what's the coach that's from Virginia Tech that's at Kentucky? You know, so, you know, you hear about those people, but I just didn't. Texas has had a great year this year, how they done it in women's college basketball.
All right, I want your opinion on this. T. Higgins. All right, so the Bengals announced today they're going to franchise T. They claim they're still working for a deal. I would also note they said the same thing last year when T played on the franchise tag. If I were advising the Bengals, and I get it, their owner's cheap, and I'm not sure his faculties are still there. I just think, man, when your guy's on the franchise tag, it's a whole lot easier to go, you know what, my hammy's a little tight today. I mean, honestly, I think this happened with the Ravens and Lamar. When they franchised Lamar, and Lamar's like, my knee's not good. I'm not going to risk, like, the knee injury of all knee injuries. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a deal. Like, I'm not here for the long term. Like, I just think when you start trying to play hardball, and then on top of that, you're not just upsetting T. You're now upsetting Joe, because Joe's basically saying, I'm going to restructure my contract so that you can make these things happen. And it doesn't feel like there's quite the desire to make these things happen. I just don't understand why in the NFL, why are they so reluctant to pay certain guys? It's like, it's very obvious. If Jamar and T are on the field, the offense is unstoppable. I guess maybe their argument would be, well, let's go spend on the defense. It's like, all right, well.
Well, I think NFL owners are the last of the Mohicans. And what I mean by that is, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but they still think they get to pick and choose everything. And every other sport, professional sports that make that much money, it has become about the players. And the players do have somewhat of a say-so. And the owners love each other in MLB and in the NBA, but they not finna work together. Like, it feel like some NFL owners, like, I'm not going to take him. You better not take him. And they listen. No, NBA, no. People are going after people's head for your best player if they can. Let them become a free agent. So, I don't get that part. I have heard that the amount of money he deserves, only one other team, and that's the Eagles, have put that much into their wide receivers. But Joe on him. And Joe said he's willing to restructure. I have heard Cincinnati owner is cheap, like you said. Yeah. He's known, you know, he's not a Jerry Jones or nothing, you know.
He's basically all his wealth comes from the team.
Oh, okay. And the other one's got a lot of other stuff going. Okay. And funny story about T. Higgins, Jeffrey, you were like this. I don't know where you came out of high school, but he's from Tennessee. He's from Knoxville.
Oh, I got you one better. My good friend, my old coach, Glenn Rogers. T, I think, is his cousin.
Really?
And you'll love this. Coach calls me up and says, because I think he's from like Chattanooga, somewhere, right?
He's by Knoxville.
Yeah, so I think it was like somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And he goes, my cousin wants to come to Ole Miss for camp, and he wants an offer. And I was like, listen, I don't put any of this together, but I go, I'll talk to my friends that are on staff.
Mm-hmm.
T, after his, I believe this is after his sophomore year, T was just a 3-star. And so when I ran it up the flagpole, it was like, we'll take a look into it. Well, the next year, T blows up.
Mm.
I'm talking 5-star. I can't remember if he was the number one receiver, but he was in the handful of receivers that you can't miss on. Ole Miss then tries to hop back in, and at that point, it's like, yeah, it's too little too late.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. T. Higgins has some really good stories. This is what I was just about to tell you. He was a phenomenal basketball player.
Oh, yeah.
I was coming to recruit T. Higgins. I needed him for my AU team. But his thing was, Coach, I can't go to this. I got a lot of football camps this summer. He came up here and played in Memphis. He went to Oak Ridge. I think that's
to
Knoxville. They came up here and played in a Memphis tournament. T. Higgins was dunking on everybody. I mean, athletic. But they was talking about them camps. And I know where he ended up going, Clemson.
Clemson.
I know he was right there in their backyard. Tennessee was in with him good at one point, too. And he
I want to say
later.
That that's also the Pruitt era. And, you know, being a receiver during the Pruitt era was not exactly what you wanted to be.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But no, T. Higgins, that guy, they need to pay him. And everybody want it done. And don't, not like with us. We just got rid of a really good receiver. But I'm going to be real with you. I got to the point, and I'm a huge Debo fan. I don't like constantly crying about something every year. So I think that we used to suck up to Debo, and I think this year that we just told him and his agent to find the team. Now, the Commanders could be really good, though. I don't know if I would have sent them there, though.
I mean, honestly, if I'm sitting there looking, it's like, we know, like, to me, it's like, I thought a 5th round that felt kind of light. But at the same time, it's like, he's been on the market long enough that I think the Niners took the best deal. That was the best offer.
I don't get NFL rope, though, with they picks, because it's like, this deal is like a pro, all-pro receiver.
Well, then it's like, well, he's, what if he is diminished and he still has the expensive deal? I mean, honestly, I think they just plug it into a computer and it just spits out the this is what a round.
Okay, because I didn't get, because they never get first rounds. They like, no. You got to be the guy that just has.
Whereas the NBA will be like, here, come on, take a first rounder from us. Like, just we want to get the contract going.
Here go four of them.
Yeah. Can I get you a Marcus Smart?
Yeah. Now, them two DNs weren't the Browns and the Cowboys, Miles. And they say people are willing to give up a first round for him.
Oh, I think they're going to give
multiple
up a lot.
Times, right, yeah, yeah.
The Cowboys franchised, I'm going to butcher the name, but the defensive lineman that had the big year, they franchised him. But, yeah, Miles, we just have to, you and I, we talked about it off the air. If you're in the NFC, we all have to collectively lock arms and say we cannot allow the Philadelphia Eagles to get Myles Garrett.
For sure.
And that's what everybody thinks is happening. They're clearing up everything. Like they cut Slay today.
They cut Slay?
Yeah. I mean, Slay's gonna find work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I know a lot of these people right here in Mississippi State and stuff.
You can tell that they're trying to clear some space. All right, let's take a break. We come back. I gotta get coach's thoughts. I've decided Cam Ward's the only quarterback I want. If the Giants are gonna take a quarterback, Cam's the one I want. So let's talk about the combine and what we saw this weekend. We'll do it next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Herd, we had the NFL Scouting Combine. Shout out to Seth Hennigan. Seth had a very good performance, sneaky athletic. Came in with not the biggest hands in the world, but overall we'll make do. I am a guy, well-documented, Herd. I care about hand sizes with quarterbacks because as a quarterback, that obviously also lacked talent. I had very small hands, and I know how difficult it is to throw the football with when you have a small hand. Like, baseball, I had a pretty good arm. Football, I could throw a ball hard, but I couldn't, like, throw it. I couldn't spin it like you have to with a big hand. So Cam comes in, Cam Ward, 9-inch hands. I also am obligated to point out Joe Burrow, 9-inch hand, too. So it's not a proven science. I've now decided, as a Giants fan, if we're going to do a quarterback, I just want Cam. Because I think if you tell me I have to bet on someone's going to be great, and I can bet on the whole field, I'm betting on Cam because I think he has the best arm. I think he has the best ball placement. I think if he's not the best athlete, I think he's super athletic. And I think he also knows how to play quarterback. He's played on bad teams, and he's also played on good teams. He put up big numbers on bad teams, and we saw this year he may have put up the best numbers in the country when he finally got on a good team. And I also don't think the losses were ever Cam's fault for Miami this year. I think I'd blame the secondary. As a Hurricane fan, how confident are you, though, that Cam will be, let's say, like, I'm not saying he has to be great, because there's so few of them, and we try to make every guy that has a great fantasy week into guy's a top five player. But if you thought, what are the odds in your mind of him being a top 10 quarterback?
I think that could happen. I truly think he will be no worse in the by 2-3 years than a top 15. I think he'll be a top half quarterback. I think he's the best available. The class ain't strong for first rounders. And so
the class might just be those two.
Two for first rounders. But, you know, I've been watching ESPN over the weekend, even this morning. I remember when it was supposed to be a juggle. But everybody's saying Cam Ward right now from the people this morning. They was like, if Titans keep it, they should take him. He should be that, you know. So I think the consensus is now with the draft, it get crazy because then it'll switch too with some people.
It's almost like – so – I've always thought the combine starts the, because you get all the teams in one spot. That's when you start the smokescreen season and everyone starts lying to each other.
Yeah.
What I do think happened, and even though Shador and Cam didn't throw, what I do think is everyone finally got there and realized when you pop in the tape, Cam has more high end than Shador does, because in the end Shador's arm is what it is, like, and Cam can basically make every throw.
Yeah, I feel like Cam can make every throw. I think Shador, though, he got an it factor in him too with accuracy. Like, I seen him make some really good throws between two people, or when a defender was right on the receiver and he put it in the right spot. I think
ball placement.
Yeah, ball placement. I feel like Cam might got more arm talent, far as could throw it further and things like that, and he can move with it. But Shador, you can tell he been trained the right way for a long time.
Shador, this is where it starts to get interesting, because how much of quarterback play is the guy's best versus, I think this oftentimes gets left out of the equation, which is, doesn't make bad plays. Because Shador, if the value is I need a guy to not screw up, I'm taking Shador.
Yeah, because Cam will try some stuff.
Correct. And he'll throw over the middle, he'll throw late, whatnot. Now, if it also becomes, it's 3rd and 15, and this is the ball game, and I got to make one throw, well, I'd rather have Cam try to make that one throw. But, like, that's where it starts to get. And then I just also think it's like, the Giants suck so much. It's like, if drafting Cam means I don't have to do this song and dance of Aaron Rodgers, I'd rather just do that. Because even if Rodgers is decent this year, which I think is entirely within the realm of possibility, what's it get you? 6 wins?
You say you rather have than Aaron Rodgers?
Yes, I'd rather just have Cam. Like, just move on. Because I feel like Rodgers delays the inevitable, and then you win enough games to where it doesn't even get you into a situation to get a quarterback next year.
Who is the best team without a quarterback, in your opinion? I'm the type of teams I would take Aaron Rodgers, like maybe the Minnesota Vikings or the Steelers or something. But
So my first thought was Steelers, The only reason why I say Steelers over the Vikings is not because of the Vikings roster. I think the Vikings have just decided they're going with JJ. And so whether or not they're right or wrong, they've decided they're turning the page to JJ McCarthy.
Oh, that was their backup.
Yeah. Well, he was the rookie that they drafted, and then he tore his knee.
Yeah.
And he was honestly maybe in line to be the starter, and then he tore his knee.
Well, Steelers need to get Sam Darnold. Before Mike Tomlin get out of there, I think as far as great of a coach, and we keep getting on him, but he'd have been the underdog. I think JJ, Mike Tomlin deserve a good quarterback.
I mean, that's kind of the other thing. It's like every points out his record in the playoffs. Like, how many times has he, like, ever since late stage Ben, he's had the worst quarterback?
For sure.
Like, he's going into a playoff game against either Burrow or Lamar with either the ghost of Russ Wilson or Mason Rudolph. Let's see, who else have we had in there? Kenny Pickett. I mean, it's not really a fair fight. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Herd, for today's Don't Tell the Story, Tell Your Story. Dallas Mavericks today announced an 8% price increase in tickets. When asked for what reason, the increases reflect ongoing investment in team and fan engagement, the team said in a statement. Feels like maybe you wait a little bit to announce that. Maybe you wait a little bit. All right, my man, I appreciate having you in here. He, of course, is Coach Norton Herd IV, Team Thad. Follow him on all socials at DreamBigHerd. Want to thank Jason Muntz for being on the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Herd, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up.